song.
The Major Spoilers Podcast is on the air. On the air. The Major Spoilers Podcast is on the air. On the air. Podcast.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven. If you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast,
The Major Spoilers Podcast is on the air.
Ashley, have you, did you finish S-Town?
I'm on episode 5.
Oh, darn. What do you think so far of S-Town? I mean, it's the big thing, right? I mean, everyone's, oh, it's from Serial and This American Life and all this stuff and blah, 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 and everyone's going gaga goo-goo over it.
Yeah, so I'm like a total, I'm a total Serial junkie. Like, I listened to the whole thing like 5 times,
oh, okay.
And then I followed this podcast called Undisclosed, mm-hmm. which was by Rabia Chowdhury, who is the friend of his who originally brought all the case to NPR.
Right.
She's a lawyer. It's her and a team. And they're the ones who like unpacked this final piece of evidence that has allowed him to get a new trial.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. So Syria's great. I think the first episode of S-Town is really not great.
Oh, really? Because that's the one that got me hooked. I was like, oh, okay, there's a murder and it has clocks about it. Okay, I can dig this.
I guess I was like, I'm pretty sure this guy's, can I swear? Are we recording?
Yeah, we're recording. Yeah, go ahead. Swear. Oh,
then I won't swear. I'm pretty sure this person is like an expletive crazy person. And I'm more interested, like, if he's just jerking this poor foolish reporter guy around. Like, that's what I thought the show was going to devolve into. And then I think the revelation that comes at the end of the second episode should have been teased at the end of the first, because mm-hmm. it's a much more interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
After that, because they kind of do away with the initial conceit right off the bat.
Yeah.
By the second episode.
I
just think structurally, it should have been put out there.
Yeah. On one hand, you're like, oh, so this is going to be a hunt for gold, for missing gold.
Yeah.
Oh, this is going to be interesting. Then it's like, oh, what's going on with these relatives and why are they acting this way after this death? And you're
but
like,
then
what's
like
up with
not
that?
So bad after all.
Yeah, and it's almost like by the time you get to the end, I felt very disappointed. I was like, oh, so this has been somewhat of a misleading premise from the beginning, although I see why
well,
they told the story that they told.
If you're trying to sell it, and they even do like even the music cues are similar to Serial.
Mm-hmm.
If you try to sell it on, you know, from the guy who was one of the editors on Serial, I see why you frame it the way you do, but it is, I mean, and I was not as far through it as you are, but I think it is very misleading.
Oh, I burned through the first 5 episodes on the first day because it was that good. And then it was over the next 2 days. What is it? 8 episodes. Then I caught up with the rest over the next couple of days. But by the end, I was just kind of, okay, well, I mean, I can see why people are excited about it, but mm-hmm. in the end, I thought it was misleading and I felt somewhat let down. Now you may come out very different because the next 2 or 3 episodes are big character reveal pieces and you
yeah.
end up finally going, and then you kind of realize what the main point is, which is fine.
I'm actually like, I think that the more interesting thing is for people to go and just Google the rose maze that he made.
Oh,
that's
yeah,
like the
yeah.
coolest thing that came out of
Yeah. The hedge maze, yeah. But
yeah,
so
it's
here's
so cool.
Here's this thing that I can't get through my mind yet. I mean, I kind of mm-hmm. guess I have a theory on why this has happened. Instead of releasing these 1 week at a time like they did with Serial and say, hey, this is an 8-episode run over the next 8 weeks or 16 weeks, however they decide that they want to release it, you're going to hear the next exciting chapter of this guy's life. And yet they decided to throw all 8 episodes up at once. And part of me is like, how do you monetize that? Because you can't do any ad insertions afterwards. And
right.
they don't do a lot of ads in the show. I think there's one like break
Although,
piece that's not really even an ad.
They're the way they do it's a Blue Apron ad, mm-hmm. like every podcast.
Right.
The way they do the ad is kind of genius.
Mm-hmm.
I like at first I heard it and I was like, that's stupid. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, no, it's really genius and I should copy that.
But they had an opportunity mm-hmm. to like sell a So, I mean, maybe Blue Apron was like, oh, we know that this is going to get 10 million downloads. And it's probably not going to get 10 million downloads because Dan Carlin gets that number. But, you know, they're probably going to get a lot of downloads and people are going to listen to this. So Blue Apron was probably the easy client to go to and say, here's how much it's going to cost for us to put this together.
Well, and they sponsor like every NPR show. I think they probably have a standing arrangement.
Yeah, they probably have the same deal like they do with, and I don't know who your Geek History Lesson is hosted with, but with Libsyn, once we reach a certain level.
That's the Jason question.
Oh, okay. Once we reach a certain level of listeners, then we get advertisers like Blue Apron and Harry's Razors and Loot Crate and all these other people because it's part of a deal that Libsyn sells with their big, you know, with their big podcasts.
Loot Crate trying to sell that Batman box.
Oh yeah.
But all over my Facebook.
My thought was that even though they did have the Blue Apron ad, my thought was that they released this all at once because it's time to go seek the next round of venture capital.
Probably.
And this was their big selling point. So they could say, look at our big numbers. And, this is what we can do with as our company grows.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if this is going to be able to lead to another series from Brian Reed. Is that the host's name? He doesn't say his name at the top of every show like Sarah Koenig, so it's not drilled into your head. Further to the ads, though, I kind of appreciate that the ads are really unobtrusive. Like, I'm so used to ads that, like, I automatically open up my player and just go 30 seconds, 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. Please listen to the ads on all of the podcasts that I'm on because they're important. Let's get them on everyone else's podcast.
Except ours. Major spoilers.
Except, right. This is a good one. Please listen to our ads. But with Serial, the MailChimp one was, like, a little much.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then the poor girl who, like, couldn't say MailChimp, but it's become
MailChimp?
It's become this really like weird staple defining thing of that podcast. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like, you kind of forget everything knows. Else.
Yeah. But it'll be interesting to see if anything ever comes out of S-Town, like if they're able to continue it or.
I bet they're not, because really S-Town is about this one guy's self-actualization, I guess. And
I guess.
And it's. I can't give anything more away because I don't want to ruin it for people who haven't listened to it. I mean, it's fascinating, and I am always interested in these audio documentaries that people like This American Life, WBEZ, out of, Chicago?
WBEZ Chicago.
Yeah, I really get a kick out of the things that they do. Gimlet Media is the same way. And I love how they're able to craft these stories. And so I would really encourage people to listen to it. But at the same time, I came out of it with a total different opinion on the backside than I did going in. And I had listened to that ad probably 7 times, because if you're on any of the, the WBEZ podcasts, This American Life podcasts, they have been running the S-Town promo, which is like the first 5 minutes or so of the show,
yeah,
like in every podcast. So finally, after I was like, oh, murder? Oh, clocks? Treasure? Okay, I'm going to give this a listen. And then I was hooked. So I would encourage
people
to listen to it.
I also think that ad like totally buries the lead and doesn't actually tell you anything that the show is about, because I listened to it and I was like, this is a crappy ad. I don't really care about this, but you told me this was from Serial. So like I went into it on the good faith of I really liked Serial.
Matthew and Rodrigo, you guys haven't listened to this or you have?
No,
I've not.
Are you interested in it now that we've talked about it?
No.
But you don't listen to podcasts, though, anyway.
Murder.
I actually tried listening to Serial. And it came to a point where one of my friends was like, I'm totally hate listening to Serial. And I'm like, well, why do you still listen? And she's like, I don't know. I'm filled with rage.
That's what I'm doing with Iron Fist right now.
That's true.
You can
stop. I don't
know.
Yeah, what episode are you on? You're up to like episode 6 or something, right?
Yeah, 6 or 7.
Yeah, I mean, just skip to the final 2 episodes.
Yeah, I need to get through it. I need to like synthesize everything that's happening because it's just such a mess in every direction.
It is, and Ashley and I talked about
every direction. like, it's just amazing. It's like, okay, so here are the bad guys, and then, like, halfway through, like, not even halfway through, two episodes in, the bad guys just hand the kingdom to the good guys. Like, okay, good guy, they're not the bad guys anymore. It's like, no, but they're still kind of bad. It's like, okay, but one of them has a crippling pill addiction. And it's like, well, why? That's not going to make him a very effective bad guy.
Yeah.
Also, it's like, the good guy's, like, really weird and aggressive. It's like, okay, Colleen Wing, here's some, it's like the bad guy comes in and is like, Colleen Wing, I'm going to buy you because I have so much money. And she's like, no, you're bad. And then the good guy comes in and is like, Colleen Wing, I'm going to buy you because I have so much money. And she's like, okay. You know?
Like, okay, so
I mean, it's like Ashley, very resistant.
Ashley and I talked about this in a lot of detail a couple of weeks ago on Finally Friday. Yeah. And there are like a million missed opportunities in this show.
Oh,
and
man.
Even if they can't go back and reshoot and rewrite, they could re-edit this show to make it 10 times better. And they could probably drop 3 episodes in the process. Because I'll be honest, I have.
It's funny because I dropped.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say I dropped Iron Fist and Legion at the same time, but for different reasons.
Okay.
And I was like, great, I hate both of these things. What am I going to watch? And then Jason watched all of both of them. And I have been duly informed that Legion is worth the struggle through it. And the weird, pretentious, artsy introduction to the character that makes no sense and is kind of boring. Whereas Iron Fist, I will say, knowing what the ending is, there's no payoff.
Yeah, there really is.
Which seems weird going right into Defenders.
You probably already, Rodrigo, have gotten to the part where Night Nurse shows up.
Yeah.
She has no business in this show.
Nope. Even less business than most of her other cameos.
Right. But I mean, literally there is, I mean, her first scene with when they're sitting around having lunch together, it's like, why are you here? You have no business being here.
You know why? Here's the amazing thing is that sometimes Iron Fist, like, is accidentally self-aware. It's like, this guy shows up, and, like, Colleen is like, why are you showing up with all this lunch? And Night Nurse is like, hey, guys, can I stick around and have this lunch? And he's like, yeah. It's like, that is what a girlfriend does for her girlfriend. When a creepy guy shows up, it's like, hey, how about I stick around?
But they're right? they're not even set up as we are this good of friends. It is set up as you're my teacher.
Yeah, I know.
And you're the student.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, this is like emergency girl, like break in case of like weirdo stuff. Right. And again,
creepy
that's
dude
not
is there.
Yeah, it's like suddenly we're the best of friends. Ha ha ha, let's go to the bathroom together out the back.
Right.
Right.
That, yeah, and that's who the Knight of Flowers is playing in Iron Fist. Like, Danny Rand is a total creepo and not nice.
He's, like, he's just like so aggressive about everything. And I just don't. It's like the real problem with it is that the writers don't know what kind of story they want to write and what kind of character they want to write.
And
so he bounces back and forth between basically the main character from Kung Fu and the main character and the main character from Taken.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two different people.
Yep.
One is like a super mystical, super calm, only fight when I have to guy. And one of them is an I'm going to shoot and punch and kick my way through this airplane. Actually, that's a different one. But you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Right.
Until everybody's dead and I have my, give me back my daughter or son or whoever's taken.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's a whole part. I don't know if you've gotten to this, but spoiler, they decide to go to China and they're like, okay, Night Nurse, you want to come with us? She's like, yeah, sure.
Oh Lord. You know, I haven't gotten to that yet.
Yeah.
You know, this show actually made me so mad that I started writing an outline for what the Iron Fist show should be. That's how mad it made me. It made me so mad that I'm actually putting work into it.
Oh,
please
no. I mean,
post it online so we can read it.
Yeah, post it on Major Spoilers. We'll definitely take a look at that because
if I don't run out of steam, because I'm like, okay, episode 1, episode 2, episode 3, episode 13. Like, I was like, already, like, the bare bones stuff is there. And I'm like, I might just, like, tire out if the show doesn't keep making me furious. But for what it sounds like, it might.
It definitely will.
It will.
The China episode where they go to China again. There's no reason for that entire episode to happen. It can be extricated from the show and no one would miss it.
It's
and
like,
then, and then I was watching it and I was like, oh God, I've just got to get through this. I've got to get through this. I've got to get through this. And I hit, I think there's what, 13 episodes?
Yeah, hit, something like that.
I hit episode 12 and I was like, oh, at the end of it, I was like, oh, this is a perfect place to end the episode, in the season, because yeah. this sets up a perfect next season and what's going on and all these things, even though it doesn't make sense how they got into the situation. And then it's like, oh, your next episode will play in 10 seconds. And I was like, no.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in a weird place with Iron Fist right now, because maybe one or two episodes ago from where I am, they introduced another living weapon, not right. as a living weapon. But
yeah.
you guys know me. I love the Capital Cities of Heaven arc. Like it, like I, if I could marry a comic,
oh, yeah.
It would be that. You guys know how much I love that.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, well, they did that.
And now I'm like,
well, they just shot themselves in the foot if they ever want to do the Seven Capital Cities of Heaven. But it's like, but they're not going to, because this is not getting another season.
Oh, and when you hit, no, I think it actually is getting another season, because here's why. According to Netflix, Iron Fist.
Most watched premiere, yeah.
Not only the most watched premiere, but the most binged season ever of any Netflix series. So it means that more people sat down and watched all 13 episodes of Iron Fist than any other show Netflix has ever put out.
See, but which I think that says more about Daredevil, Jessica Jones, and Luke Cage than it does about Iron Fist.
Maybe, but I think because of that hype, I think that guarantees that there's another season coming.
Yeah. You know, that is true. It's kind of like in movies. Everybody cares about the opening box office. That says nothing about the movie. It says right. more about the ad campaign or the prior movies in the series.
Right, which mm-hmm. is why. And then, of course, if it does well internationally for another movie, then that guarantees that, hey, it doesn't matter if everyone in the United States hates the Transformers. If it's making, you know, $400 million in China, then we're going to be cranking out more Transformers movies before you know it. So I think there's going to be another season, but the way that the season ends, they kind of did shoot themselves in the foot if they ever wanted to introduce any of the other immortal weapons. So it's very problematic. And Matthew, you may not want to watch the show at all, because there's no wrestling of a dragon, but they sure talk about it a hell of a lot.
See, you can't tell me about a dragon. You got to show me a dragon.
It's just so bad. Anytime
Danny,
they reference,
where'd you get that black
Moon,
tattoo? Got it from a dragon, the Undying.
There's just
a
like,
dragon.
Maybe season two will have the dragon.
So many things they could have done. So many things, and they just don't. It's like, oh, are we gonna get a flashback to Kunlun? It's like, no.
We'll show you a cave.
We'll show you like some monks beating up a kid.
Yeah.
In a hut. And like, yeah. That's it. That's all you get.
Ugh.
That sounds terrible. I still haven't finished Luke Cage, so I don't know.
You can stop at episode 6.
Yeah, that's a midway point, right? That's where.
It is like up to that point, it is, in my opinion, the most perfect Marvel show
mm-hmm.
to date. And See. Then it goes really comic booky. It gets real bad.
Yeah, I mean,
I love comic booky.
Once Copperhead becomes
not,
the
might
bad,
like it.
Yeah, once Copperhead becomes the big bad, I agree that it turns a little bit more crazy than it should have.
Yeah, they get
Copperhead or Diamondback
or whatever his name is, Diamondback.
I don't know, but they get rid of Mahershala Ali, and it's not good after that.
You know, all of these series have this issue, which is that they're like these street level Marvel series with this supernatural aspect to it. And they have, I think all of them, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, they have a really hard time walking that line of this is yeah. comic book stuff, this is superhero stuff, and this is real world gritty stuff. And it's largely because your main characters have superpowers, and usually your bad guys don't, except obviously for the huge exception of Jessica Jones.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, well, once we've established that your main character is impervious to bullets and or can, you know, see perfectly in the dark and is super acrobatic, is like, what can you throw? What can a bunch of like bad guys throw at the challenge? I was like, well, more guns, I guess. But it's like you want that supernatural challenge to come from somewhere, but it's so hard to do. It's like it's really mm-hmm. difficult for them to walk right up to the line before you actually do have to face off against Stilt Man, you know?
I think they also suffer from a too large episode order. And I would say,
that's what I was just going to say. I was just going to ask that question.
I would say, yeah, the DC shows suffer from that as well. I think Legends of Tomorrow ending at 17 is perfect. And you can see the cracks in some of the other shows where, because they're reaching for 22 and 24 episodes, now we still don't know who Savitar is. And that sure is annoying. And I think I hope not. Not my boyfriend, H.R. Wells. But I think the Marvel shows suffer in the same way. They're 13 episodes, and really, mm-hmm. like, they could be done in 8 or 10.
So I didn't know, because I haven't really tracked anything down, because Netflix has said in the past that shows can be seasons can be as long as they need to be. If it needs to be 10 episodes, then it's 10 episodes.
They say that.
That's what I wonder, because really, Daredevil season 2 could have been 2 seasons had they rearranged things a little bit. Jessica
could have cast
Jones,
somebody like palatable as Elektra, and it would have been dope.
Yeah, they really, as you said, 6 episodes of Luke Cage was perfect. The Jessica Jones bit got a little bit too long, and there's like 3 episodes you could yank out of there. But I just feel like they're being forced into this 13 episode deal, and there's really no reason for it, because as far as I know, they haven't released these on DVD yet. So it's not like it's a...
Oh, I don't think so, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like it's a post-purchase issue. It's, we just need people to watch these shows. Well, if it's that good, people will watch it again and again and again on your Netflix, and they're already subscribed. So I'm not really sure that these series needs to be 13. And I'm pretty sure Defenders is much less.
It is only...
Like 6 episodes?
6 or 8, yeah. I don't know, because I conflate it with the Inhuman show, which is going to be like...
Yeah,
5 season. Episodes long, and shooting in IMAX, and people mm-hmm. are supposed to pay to go see it.
8 episodes is how long it is. 8 episodes for the Defenders.
Yeah, there you go.
And they did show the first little bit of that today pop up online, where all 4 of them are in an elevator together, and you can tell that they must have just got engaged in something, because Daredevil's breathing really hard and Danny's acting weird, and then Jessica mm-hmm. turns around and she sees the camera in the elevator, and she just jumps up and punches it out, and it says Defenders coming soon.
Yeah. Marvel has that issue, though. I don't know if you guys have been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but they're in like season 4, and they've literally, the first half of this season was pretty solid, and then it just stopped, and it turned into something completely different, and it's like 2 different shows, and the first one was really, really cool, and I want more of that show, and the second one is kind of But I'm kind of watching it now in the hopes that some of the brilliance of the first half of the season will come back around. Or, as I like to call it, the Barry Allen conundrum.
Or currently the Oliver Queen conundrum, because Arrow season 5 is like outstanding after 2 really weak seasons.
Yeah, you can't pay me to watch Arrow.
I will watch it
5 episodes of Arrow, and you can have them.
David Ramsey takes a shirt off, I'm there.
Do you guys follow any of these people on their Instagrams or socials? I follow Stephen Amell and Grant and what's his name? Who's HR and Cisco and Danica.
Tom Cavanaugh.
Tom Cavanaugh. That's right.
Cavanaugh's a hoot.
Yeah, I do follow them. It's a joy checking some of them out. And a lot of times they will be posting a lot of behind the scenes stuff. So if people want to know, you know, what's going on set, they're sharing that stuff. And it's kind of interesting, because the CW has kind of, or maybe it's Warner Brothers, has loosened their grip a little bit on mm-hmm. how much of that stuff that they can share. Because like when Kevin Smith was doing his, he was like, hey, is it okay if I take a picture of the title of my episode and post it online? And Berlanti Productions like, yeah, sure, go ahead. In fact, they did it for him. Nice. So I think that's kind of cool that you get a lot more access from the social media.
I follow Melissa Benoist, but she doesn't really post anything.
She's too busy being Supergirl, saving the planet, man.
She's too busy dating Mon-El in real life. I would recommend...
Really? Allegedly.
whatever. If it's true, then their on-screen chemistry doesn't reflect it. I would recommend
Well, if you're gonna hate Monel
on the show so much, like, it's real. The feelings are real.
When her former husband was on the show with her, there also was not that spark.
Well, I don't. They might have had divorce proceedings by that time. It takes a while.
Yeah. That's probably what caused the divorce, was working together on Supergirl.
That's what happened to Martin Freeman and his wife, who went after she was on Sherlock and ruined the show. They got divorced, and then they killed her. But David Harewood, who plays Martian Manhunter, has a super great Twitter, because he has a Martian Manhunter action figure that he'll, like, take to set with him.
Oh, really?
Or different events, and it's really funny, yeah.
I was watching it behind the scenes. And I was really surprised at how much of the Martian Manhunter stuff is not prosthetic.
Like, yeah, almost everything except the face.
Well, like the face, yeah, the face is like all CGI replacement. And I was like, really? Wow. I didn't, and even something as simple as, you know, Martian Manhunter laying on a table, and they'll just say, oh, we're just going to CG in the head instead of having a really cool prosthetic for it. So. I found that kind of interesting.
I think it's cheaper now.
Probably.
Which is ridiculous to think about.
Probably.
Well, and, you know, it also saves them having to put David Harewood in makeup for 8 hours.
True.
I know in some scenes it's his stand-in, and he will just ADR the lines. Like, it's his stand-in in the costume, and then they'll do up the head. And then, I don't know, because he does a lot of other projects. Like, he was just in that BET Nelson Mandela movie, and, like, he does a lot of theater in England. So I think there must be a thing in his contract where he's like, I get to phone in some of my lines.
Oh. Interesting. What else? What else? Ashley, you went to WonderCon this last weekend. How was that?
It was a con.
Oh, really? Not that exciting?
No, WonderCon is a weird con because it's the baby cousin of
San Diego.
Mm-hmm. And you're in Anaheim, which is always a bummer because you're in Anaheim. But it always
Disney World.
First of all, they're only the ducks. They haven't
that's
been
all
mighty
we know about
since
Anaheim.
It's Disneyland. It's not Disney World.
Oh, that's right.
And,
sorry.
I'll be damned if I'm paying $100 to go. I don't like Disneyland, which is part of the reason why Anaheim's terrible, because everything's overpriced. Mm-hmm. But it always feels like a dry run for San Diego, because as long as WonderCon has been around, because it's owned by Comic-Con International, there have been swirling rumors that SDCC might move there, or it might move to Vegas.
Right.
And but this year, I don't know who screwed up the planning or what, but WonderCon must have been broke, because all of the big name guests went to either Dallas or Barcelona. Because why would you want to go to Barcelona? So last year, like, DC, Marvel always has like
live stream and everything. And
yeah, like, Marvel never does anything, but DC like had this amazing Rebirth event. And like, it just felt like very exciting and very vital and like an important convention. And then this year it was just like, it was just another convention,
well, that's
which
why
is fine, but it's
Foxy.
Not exciting.
Well, that's why I was really surprised that the Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo, Batman Heavy Metal comic was announced at Fan Expo, and they streamed it. I was like, why was this not at WonderCon? And then it's just like,
well,
you're right.
Because Dallas must have paid them to go out there.
They probably paid them a lot of money. And also with the Barcelona one, too, because it was, you're right, there were so many creators that I saw down in Dallas than I saw over at Anaheim.
Yeah, so it was weird. Like, the coolest thing, I guess, was that the Judas Contract screened.
Oh, yes,
And it was pretty amazing.
Did you see it?
I have not seen it. I've seen the clips from it, but I've been reliably informed that it's amazing and
how,
I need it to be.
How long is the Judas Contract movie, do you know? Because I keep seeing clips from it, and I'm like, this can't all possibly be from the same movie.
All the animated movies are 90 minutes.
Okay, because I see clips and it's like Nightwing and Starfire, and then like they're just meeting, and then there's like another one, and they're like getting a divorce, and then there's like another one, and like Beast Boy has a job.
Yeah, they burn through the story very quickly in these movies. I'm looking right now, it listed as, 84 minutes is how long it is.
So an hour 25, That's a movie that didn't need to be made.
Well, So,
but it's like Teen Titans' greatest movie. So
it's their greatest story, but it's a movie that didn't need to be made.
When you have Damien as part of this story, then it's not the Judas Contract.
Right.
I would definitely agree with that.
That's part of the problem with seeing these movies is that it's always these classic stories, but they've aged them up and they're using the current cast. And I'm just like, well, why are you even calling it that? Why are we not making a new movie and calling it something unique and not, you know, trying to scam me by saying The Judas Contract, which I loved in 1984, and doesn't need to be a movie.
You look at Teen Titans and you're like, ah, Teen Titans, Judas Contract, best storyline ever. It's like, what are some other Teen Titans storylines that they could use? Because I'm really not familiar, but we keep seeing the Judas Contract. Every iteration of the Teen Titans that I've ever seen has the Judas Contract.
Yeah, the last movie they had, which was the Justice League versus the Teen Titans, that one was rather brutal, but it was really a Raven versus her father storyline, which...
Yeah, that's another, like, classic. Like, Trigun was their... I mean, if you don't count, like, the 1960s Teen Titans, that was only four kids.
And nobody does.
Like, right. If you're just counting like the new Teen Titans, Trigun was their first villain. Like, so that's why they always return to that. Like in all the animated series is, including Teen Titans Go, like Trigun is there.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was actually the Teen Titans introduction was in that Teen Titans versus Justice League movie. And now this is their own movie from that.
You know, I appreciate that they're giving Terra work. I'm down with that, but I don't know. There's the Titans Hunt, which was very 90s and involved lots of murder. Let's see. There's the story where Cyborg goes to Russia and gets reprogrammed, which is terrible. And
Dick and Corey's Wedding is a pretty big
terrible.
Pretty big moment.
A lot of the Teen Titans stories, other than the Judas Contract, are what we like to refer to as they suck. There's Donna's Wedding, but the problem with Donna's Wedding is you can't do it as a movie because it requires you to have been reading the book for 40 issues beforehand to give a damn about why she's marrying this creepy old professor.
Also, nobody likes the guy she gets married to.
Yeah, Terry's a jerk.
But the thing is, again, I need to see this movie for myself. But yes, Terra is in this movie. But from everything I've seen and the characters that are in there, including Kevin Smith playing himself, this has really a loose connection to the actual comic book story.
They did Judas Contract in the Teen Titans animated series.
Yes, the first one. And I thought that was really pretty solid.
They sanitized it and they had to make huge changes to it. And one of the primary changes they made was that Terra was, first of all, unwilling, and second of all, wavering heroic. And the thing about Terra in that made the Judas Contract memorable is that she was a plant, a spy, a double agent from day one. She joined the team with the intent to destroy it and was never, ever an actual Teen Titan in her heart. She was evil, evil, evil. And she was, you know, one of the first times that they were able to play that traitor trope that goes all the way back to the 40s, play it as completely straight and have the characters fall for it. Nightwing, Robin was like, yes, we trust you, Terra. Here is my secret identity as Dick Grayson, and my dad is Batman. Don't tell anybody like the Terminator who will come and murder me. I mean, that's the hook of that story. And if you neuter Terra and you make her, you know, a noble savage or someone who actually has a heart of gold or something different, then you've kind of neutered that story to me. And I feel like, do something else. Don't try and give me the Killing Joke with 40 minutes of sex scene stuck on top of it to try and, you know, adult it up. Do something else.
It is interesting because they have that ability. You know, it's like they can write new stories. A big part of why the Batman animated series and whatever and everything that came after it was as strong as it was because sometimes they would just write up new stories.
Yeah,
change the origins of characters, introduce new characters, and then just straight up write new storylines.
I had an interesting conversation with someone on Twitter this week because the comment, and I think it went out to all of us, was asking whether Mr. Freeze was a good character or not. And I was like, no, he's horrible. I mean,
Mr. Freeze has always been nuts.
Yeah. And the person, I did say He's not a good guy. He may be a tragic character, but he's not good. And the person responded back to me and was like, and there's nothing wrong with this person. And he was like, yeah, but he's doing it all for Nora. I was like, Nora wasn't introduced until Batman, the animated series. Until then, he was doing all that stuff out of pure greed. And this is the thing. And this is one of the reasons why I like Major Spoilers is we have people from 3.5 generations of comic time periods to where someone like Ashley wasn't around until Batman the Animated Series was already on the air. And so
I don't know if that's true.
Maybe it's after for you, but I mean when we're looking at like 89, 90, I'm sorry, 91, 92.
That was my first Batman.
Yeah, so most people only know Mr. Freeze and his love for Nora and trying to do everything to bring her back because it was introduced, as Rodrigo said, in Batman the Animated Series, and it carried over into the comic books. Same way with Harley Quinn. She wouldn't be in the comic books if she hadn't been a popular character on the animated series first.
Right, and that's the thing. The creators are really kind of hemming themselves in. They're not creating new Harley Quinns. And we've had this argument a million times, but you know, Mr. Freeze was in the Batman 66 show played by Otto Preminger.
Yeah.
This is important to know. It doesn't mean anything. It's not really anything other than that's what my brain does when you say names. But more importantly, he didn't really have any decent backstory until Batman, the animated series. Mm-hmm. He was boilerplate cold guy. There's a cold guy. Every DC hero has a cold guy, has a gorilla, and has an evil bald jerk. You got your Captain Cold. You got your Icicle. You got your Mr. Freeze. You have tons of these schmucks. And that Batman, the animated series, they said, how can we make this character interesting? What can we do? What can we give him? And they gave him this incredibly compelling hook that completely redefined the character to the point where I honestly think that post-Batman the Animated Series, Victor Freeze, is, for all intents and purposes, a different character than Mr. Zero, who showed up in 1959 or whenever it was.
Yeah. So that's kind of the point, right? I mean, and that's tying back into these movies is that the Mr. Freeze people know now is not the Mr. Freeze that you and I would know from, 30 years ago. Likewise, Teen Titans, the Judas Contract, is its own thing following a loose plot, which, again, not a lot of people are going to be familiar with the source material. And when I say a lot of people, I mean target audience people are going to be very different watching this movie than going out and collecting the trade paperback. That's my opinion, my guess is that this is targeting a much different demographic.
This falls into that same complaint that I have, though, of having to remember multiple versions of the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can tell you right now that in my head, Mon-El, Ashley hates him. If you count that TV Mon-El, I can probably knock down. There are 9 virtually identical, but must be distinguished as alternate universes because of the way the stories have been told versions of Mon-El. There are literally almost a dozen different versions of this relatively minor Superman throwaway character because we keep going back and going, well, we're going to call this the Judas Contract. We're going to have this character and call him Mon-El, but we're not going to do the whole Mon-El. And maybe we're going to call his dad
Largand. His name is
Hercules.
Mon-El.
His parents are Hercules and Lois Lane. And
his dad is the only one in the family worth watching.
Wait, Kevin Sorbo's on
Supergirl.
Mon-El's dad.
Mon-El's father. Yeah.
And Terry Hatcher's his mom.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's what happens when I don't watch the
loves nothing.
Second season.
Nothing. I want you to know I've been married for 23 years as of April 1st. Thanks for the presents, guys. And I don't know if I even love my wife as much as Berlanti Productions loves doing those casting gags, you know, because Supergirl's parents are Superman and Supergirl, and Mon-El's parents are Lois Lane and Hercules.
Almost Superman, runner-up for Superman.
Right, Superman-ish.
Lois Lane and Hercules, because Hercules one time had fallen in love with Lois Lane.
Right.
Hercules and Superman had to fight over that.
Yeah. That's clearly what they're referencing.
Why wouldn't they? I would.
Well, it was.
And then it would cause me to have to write a whole article on Major Spoilers about it and call it like Supergirl back or something. I don't know.
Hey,
Supergirl back.
No, you can't call it that. That has too many mix-a-lot connotations. You have to call it something better. I don't
Supergirl
know.
Supergirl Gordon.
Which Gordon? The first Gordon or the second Gordon? Because the second Gordon was better and also, you know, got along better with Oscar the Grouch.
I went on my rant again this week about...
Wait, which rant?
The one about in talks to is not the same as hired.
Mm-hmm.
Because the and I mean it's really cool news, right? If it everything gets signed on the dotted line,
it's not cool news.
No, it's not. Yeah, it's yeah. But you know, the Joss Whedon is going to write, direct, and star in Batgirl movie.
Starring, yeah,
yeah.
He'll play Batgirl.
He'll play Batgirl. Yeah.
Why can't we just give it to a woman or a femme person? What is so effing difficult about that?
Well,
I don't give a flying whatever if he's a feminist. Like, you're making a movie that's supposed to speak to a female audience,
right?
You know, I can't make a movie that speaks to a male audience in the same way that I can as a female, and just saying, oh, he's a feminist and he did Buffy once and like la 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 la, like that doesn't make him the most qualified person to do it. I understand why if you're WB and you're a bunch of bean counters, you go for that. But like, it's not exciting news. It's a bummer.
It's the same thing.
But
as
the thing is, it hasn't even
Dean
been.
Kane.
Well, but it hasn't even. It's not even a done deal as far as every website I've looked at.
I know.
And it sourced out
even
a deadline.
Even Variety deadline that broke it was like in talks.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And that's the thing that makes me mad is they'll say in talks to, and suddenly every other site is like, oh, it's confirmed. Joss Whedon is doing the Batgirl movie. And oh, it's going to be based on the Gail Simone run of Batgirl. Isn't that awesome? Everybody's like, no, nothing's been. I mean, no contracts have been signed. No dates have been set. Why are you?
It means he had a meeting.
Yes, that's all it means.
And that's cool. I mean, I
guarantee you, though, that a Batgirl movie is not going to be based on, I mean, it may loosely be based on a comic book story or concept, but they're not going to tell the greatest Batgirl story ever told.
Well,
because
that
would be Batgirl Year One, and they're not going to do that.
But also, how can you tell the Gail Simone story? Like, are you going to set it post Oracle?
Yeah,
that's
it would have to be.
To unpack.
That is a lot.
They'll
do it, though.
Movie.
They'll do it. That's the thing that's frustrating about DC and Marvel is they compress decades of material into 5 minutes at the beginning of the movie.
I don't think they even have to address the Batgirl thing.
Burnside, because that's a cleaner start.
Yeah,
that is a cleaner start. But I mean, did you see the first 20 minutes of Suicide Squad? That was 9 other movies.
Oh, yeah, but I don't care about the Suicide Squad, so it was fine.
But they could do that with Batgirl. You start with Batgirl, thing, you do the flashback, you do the, she falls, you go to black and white, you have your credit montage of her being Oracle and doing her thing.
I don't think you have to do any of that.
You don't have to, but they will.
I don't.
You know what I really wish they'd do?
What's that?
I wish that, here's my pitch for a Batgirl story.
Okay.
And it has to come along with a new Batman story. So the new Batman, Ben Affleck Batman, who I know he wants to get out of it, but just follow along. You do the Killing Joke, except the Joker does all that stuff to Batman, and that cripples Batman. And then you do Nightfall, but with Batgirl. So Batgirl fights Bane and gets her back broken, and then she comes back and beats him up in a wheelchair. You just swap those two stories.
You know they won't do that.
No, of course not.
Batman's not allowed to have weaknesses.
I know that it's going to be Barbara Gordon. That's the only thing that is almost a given.
Wait.
I mean,
Jeff Johns is still alive, it will be Barbara Gordon. The end.
Well, because I don't think that they would. I mean, if you suddenly, here's the reason why, because you just had a super successful, the Lego Batman movie that has Barbara Gordon in it as Batgirl, played by Rosario Dawson, by the way.
Yep.
But it would be like, why can't we have a Cassandra Cain Batgirl? That one's a little bit easier to tell a story about other than
And then you could cast Lady Shiva as her bad guy and just retell the Batman Deathstroke story.
Yep. I think you could. There, I mean, and we know Deathstroke is one of the characters that is upcoming in, what is it, Justice League or the Batman movie?
Batman.
So, yeah.
That's what we need is
played
more Deathstroke.
Played by Chuck Mangione.
That's what, not Chuck Mangione.
I don't know the guy's actual name, and all I can think of every time someone brings them up is Chuck Mangione hiding in the Megalomart in King of the Hill.
Dang old Megalomart, boom!
Oh, I just realized today. I had
Joe
a very,
Mancianello.
I had a very sad realization today that this town, when Hastings closed, we have no comic book store. We have no bookstore. We have no music store. We have no real toy store in this town anymore.
Do you live in Footloose? Can you dance?
You know, it wouldn't surprise me if one of the crazy preachers in this town suddenly started talking about no dancing.
Is John Lithgow your dad?
If it helps, we've got no governor and no real direction.
Well, that's,
and
that's true, too.
we're kind of just drifting as a state, you know. We're hovering near the bottom of everything. So, I don't know. Even my hometown only has two comic book shops, and we've got like 250,000 people. You'd think you could have more than one comic book shop.
I wonder if there is a, you know, because there's a real cool metric that I think most advertisers, going back to S-Town, when advertisers ask you for your numbers and everything, there's a click-through rate that I think is like 0.01. So whatever your listenership is, multiply that by, it's either 1% or 0.01, which is 1%.
And that
tells you how many people would actually buy the product that's being advertised on your show. And so what, I wonder if
I know for a Kickstarter, you're supposed to count on 3% of your Twitter followers.
Right. And it's really super low, right? I mean, it's kind of depressing when you think about it.
It is. And then you do the math and you're like, that was completely correct. How interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I wonder if there's something like that for comic books. I wonder if Diamond, they probably have it and they probably talk about it at their retailer summit kind of things.
They,
I wonder
they
if
keep it in a secret room.
Well, I wonder if there is a magic thing, Matthew, and maybe you know from, and Ashley too, from working at comic book stores, if they said, hey, we know we're going to get X number of people coming in based on the population size of this town or city or metropolis. Have you guys ever been told anything like that, that, hey, a town of 250,000, we can expect maybe 3,000 people to be reading comics? And I'm doubting that 3,000 people ever came into Gatekeeper.
Yeah, that's about our user base.
Really?
Okay. But the thing about it is we have a weird situation in that there are neighboring towns where people come in. And of course, there's a big college town that doesn't really have a whole lot of heavy duty comic book stores where some people are actually traveling over here.
No, there's a boom. There's a Boom Comics in Lawrence.
Okay.
You should go check it out. It's really cool.
Okay. That doesn't change the fact that people would still drive from Lawrence to come shop at Gatekeeper.
You're talking about Gatekeeper. Okay.
Yeah.
You said there was no comic book store. I'm just correcting you on that part.
I didn't say there was no comic book store. I said there was no heavy duty comic book store, which is an entirely different matter. I think there are actually two comic book stores still operating in Lawrence, but
Atomic Kitty is inside of the used video game store, and it's upstairs, and they have no posted hours. So the only time you know whether the comic book area is open is because they have a big cutout of some movie stand up that blocks the entrance or doesn't block the entrance.
Right. Which is what I'm...
Sounds exclusive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really
weird.
It
is. I've been in there. It's pretty awesome. If you go downstairs, there's a little cafe where you can order a bowl of cereal and watch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on a 19-inch monitor. It's fascinating. I recommend it.
So you think a 3,000 base. So what would that be? Run those numbers. That is what? 1%? No, that'd be...
1% of 3,000 would be 19 people. No.
It'd be about 2,500, 3,000. So that's right around in that area. Yeah.
You're doing so much math right now.
Okay.
Well,
3% of 3,000 is what?
No, I said 1% of 250,000.
1% of 250,000. Okay. Yeah, that'd be about right.
Yeah, that's right in that ballpark.
You are totally sick. 2,500. You're scaring me.
Why? You just move your zeros.
Because I shut up. No, and I would say that yeah, that is based on old information. Because you remember, I don't know if you knew this, but right. I don't work there anymore.
You used to. Yeah, yeah. Actually, was anything like that ever talked about there at
the thing in the place?
I forget the place where you worked at.
Earth 2 Comics,
that's
Sherman
right.
Oaks.
Earth 2 Comics.
I was never important enough to have any part of the ordering process or anything like that. I have no idea. But I feel like Los Angeles is a bad city to try and make an assumption about how your populace acts. And that location is quite close to Burbank, which is where they make the movies and the TV and people who know one mm-hmm. of the people who owns a part of the store would often come to us seeking out source material. So yeah, I don't know.
So you think it's maybe a little bit more hyperinflated than there? And it may be.
I think it probably is. And I think,
Well, if we went with
depending on whether or not there's a giant sale.
Yeah. If we went with that 1% number, then our town, which is about 30,000, maybe a little bit less, depending, we're also a college town. If it's only a 1% sell through, that's only like 200 people. You could run a business off 200 or 300 regular customers.
But they'd have to be regular.
But they would have to be regular in how much they're spending.
If 300 is your total consumer base, 75 of those are regular customers.
Yeah.
The remainder of those are people who pop in and out or set up a pull list for 9 months and then say, "Oh, I don't want to buy my book."
So the other interesting thing about this people. The other interesting thing about this revelation goes into my other question that I asked on Twitter was, how many of you have been to a bookstore recently? You know, where and when? And so I only got a smattering of replies back from people at saying that, yeah, I went last month, or I went 2 months ago, or I went, 3 weeks ago.
Well, so you added a caveat that I didn't understand, so I didn't.
Well, what I didn't want was, oh, I went down to my comic book store, and it's like, no, that's not a book store, that's a comic book store. So the answer was, when was the last time you went to a bookstore, and why? Because I didn't want somebody to go, oh, they got a Starbucks, and I went in there to grab a coffee. But I also wanted to make it clear that it was to be a bookstore and not a different kind of store.
But all of my bookstores are also stores that have games and movies and records and all of that crap. So I don't have just a bookstore option in Topeka.
You have a place where you can buy books.
Yes, but by your definition, it's not a bookstore, you just said.
I would bet that they would classify themselves as a bookstore. So the reason why I'm asking this is because we've been having this conversation for a while about, is it time for the comics to go to a 6 month trade release, go straight to the trade? Because it looks like that is where people are doing a lot of buying. And whether they're going to a comic book store or whether they're going to a bookstore kind of matters, because that kind of depends on how you're targeting and marketing your comics. Because if you want people to go to the bookstore for it, first of all, is there a bookstore in the area, or are we just expecting everyone to buy everything through Amazon, which I don't have a problem with? Or are we trying to get people into brick and mortar bookstores, or are we trying to get them into brick and mortar comic book stores? And I wonder if there's a problem in the industry, and I think it is still a problem, where the publishers are trying to cater to brick and mortar comic book stores instead of other outlets for their wares. Because we saw what happened when digital comics came out, where suddenly the brick and mortars were like, well, we're going to stop ordering from you if you're just going to release digitals on the same day. And so then the comic book publishers had to make them happy and make concessions about what they would sell and how much they would sell it for and all these kinds of things. When maybe the comic book industry would do really well if they were just looking at maybe other outlets for their product?
See, the problem you have, though, is that from one perspective, you have to expect that those 6 month lead larger collections of books are going to lead to less diverse, and diverse in terms of the number of characters, the number of situations, material. Essentially, what I feel you would get is, we're going to have a 6-month lead time on this. We have to make sure that our artists and writers are getting paid. So we're going to be even less,
They're all going to have, it's like, if we're going to make six trades, three of them have to be Batman just to make
right.
sure.
And the
it's
other two have to be that, Spider-Man.
But there are major publishers right now that are being quoted by reputable sources as stating that diversity is a problem that they have. So maybe that's just giving voice to the fact that it doesn't matter how often the books are going to come out. It's still going to be 8 Spider-Man titles.
Well, yeah. so just a real quick, I had an interesting conversation with someone. Was it this weekend? Yeah, it was this weekend. I think it was on Sunday. It was a nice conversation, a long conversation, where those three interviews are, I don't want to give an exact number, but it feels like it's about 85% correct. It feels
right.
like
the things were not
transcribed correctly for that interview.
That's definitely a claim that's being made. And look, when you work in the press, it is your discretion to format an article and an interview and, take things out as you will. And that's an agreement that you make when you go and visit somebody's site that you know that they've done that and blah, 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 blah. However, some of the statements that were made, I mean, you say that and there's no other way to take it.
Right. I mean, there's
probably it's what was said was problematic. And then probably the way it was disseminated was problematic as well.
Right. Yeah, but the interesting thing about that is somewhere in follow up reports, etc., it seems to indicate that like YA titles are doing really, really well, not in the comic book store, but in other outlets.
Shock.
What are the odds?
So
kids
that's
with
why
disposable income.
Almost like the kids don't go to the comic book stores and don't understand the arcane psychotic pre-ordering mechanism.
Right. But if they can go down to the local Walden Books and they can pick up a trade paperback of or something of Young Lois Lane Adventures. Mm-hmm. Then that's where those products are doing really, really well.
Those novels are great, by the way.
They really are.
The Lois Lane books are so good, and the Superhero Girls books are so good.
And those are doing extremely well, not in the direct comic book market.
Mm-hmm. Other markets?
So, I know there's a lot of blame and finger-pointing going on in the interviews, those three interviews, or the three-part interview. But it seems like maybe the publishers need to figure out who their target audience is and recognize that there is a different target market for the Lois Lane book. Mm-hmm. And there is a place where people go to buy that Lois Lane book. And then there is a place where people go and buy their weekly Spider-Man books. And then there is a place where people go and watch their Teen Titans movies that have nothing to do with the trade paperback that you have to go to another place to buy. So maybe it's the publishers needing to figure out who's our target audience and where do those target audience people congregate. And that's where we need to push our product there.
I think that is definitely the way to go. Do I think the market's going to go that way?
No,
probably not.
And I don't want to give, I don't want to show all my hands here, but I learned from Mark Spagnuolo, who's the Wood Whisperer, a good friend of Major Spoilers. He and his wife, Nicole, have been giving me advice for years now. And Mark even goes out on the record and says, if you are putting all of your income in one basket, you're going to have a big problem when that market goes away suddenly. And he's really talking about on the podcasting side, if you're relying only on YouTube's money, what happens when your numbers dip and suddenly somebody decides to cancel your channel? You need to have multiple sources of income to keep that thing alive.
I think everyone at SourceFed is feeling that right now.
Well, yeah, without saying names, Ashley, that's exactly who I was talking about. And I know that when we talk about Warner Brothers,
it's not a secret.
No, I know when we talk about Warner Brothers, though, they have income coming from a lot of different places. But where does DC have its direct income coming from? There's probably some licensing deals, which is great. But everything else kind of relies on, or a majority of it relies on, comic book store sales.
It goes back to that question too of when are we going to start counting digital sales? Like, why Never. Is that a market well, that because, why is Comixology treated like the redheaded stepchild of publishing?
Because, and this goes back to a monopoly, because Diamond doesn't sell the digital comics to Comixology, and that's why they're not tabulated.
Look, right. Diamond, you're not supposed to be able to have a monopoly. That's like a thing about America and capitalism. So get over it.
It's 35 years. The monopoly has been going on longer than most of this panel has been alive. Right. And more importantly, the monopoly has not just shaped the way the comics are ordered, the way the comics are made. It has shaped what we read in comics.
Oh,
the material that we read, the characters that we get to read about, the way the stories are structured and written is all based on Diamond Comics distributors having that lock and having the ability to say, this is how it's going to go. You have to order all of your comics 2 months ahead of time, and you can't do this and you can't do that. And if you don't do this, then we won't distribute your book.
I am slowly, I don't know when this will be done, but I'm slowly trying to work on an article that talks about this a little bit, because apparently this all boils down to an incredible snowstorm that happened in 1986. I want to say 86, right before, Crisis on Infinite Earths kicked off. And one of the things that happened during this snowstorm is DC was going to come out with a whole different format size of their comics. They were going to be more magazine sized. But because of the snowstorm, contracts couldn't get signed, products couldn't get delivered in time, and Diamond came in and swooped up everything and became the de facto distributor for everything. And they dictated that it needs to stay in this format.
And that's part of the reason why they suck. It's also the reason why you don't see characters created later than about 1999 who ever really hit it big. And the ones that have are miraculous. Like, you know, your Ms. Marvels, you're maybe the new Ghost Riders. I mean, the entirety of the distribution arm and the entirety of the way comics are made are designed to reward the people with, and I fall into this all the time. I bought Apollo and Midnighter for the sole reason that it had Extraño from the New Guardians in it. But that's a selling point for me, and it's designed to reward me for the fact that in 1987 I bought New Guardians number one, and I still remember that, and that's a big selling point that made me buy six $2.99 issues of the Apollo and Midnighter comic book. That is exactly what they want. That is what they're trying to engender in people. And that's also the reason why we get these problems with diversity, where we get this, if it's not Barry Allen, it's not the real Flash. We have to kill Ryan Choi to bring back the real Adam.
All of these
characters, but that's so the thing. Great. He's back now. You know, well, he's in the Justice League.
Is he? Because I haven't followed
him. Heard that about him, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, he's in the Justice League under Batman. It's the Justice League of America. Okay. It's him, Black Canary,
Lobo,
Killer Frost, Lobo, the Ray, Vixen, and Batman. And it's actually a pretty solid book that no one will read, and it will get canceled in 22 issues.
How do you think we really did talk about it, but how do you think that metal, Batman metal, is going to do? It's only 6 issues long.
Can I answer in the form of a song?
Go ahead, I suppose.
I don't care. But ask me about Batman and I don't care.
But
oh, sorry.
For DC and for a lot of Batman fans, the fact that you're getting Snyder and Capullo together again,
it's going to sell.
Is going to sell that thing through the roof.
Well, sure.
I wonder if all 6 issues will be the number one sellers.
Yeah, they will. They know how to sell Batman.
Well, and that's the other thing that kind of came out was there was a little finger pointing at companies that have return policies. And that's what boosts, because when we post the top 300 comics over on Major Spoilers, those are what went to the direct market. That's how much Diamond shipped to the direct market. That doesn't have how many actually sold at the retailer level. And if you have a company that is doing returns, 100% return or whatever, 75% return, you can sell to a store, you know, 1,000 copies, and 900 of those may come back. But from Diamond's point of view, 1,000 comics were sold.
Well, and it's like, you know, how many copies were sold of Batman Dark Knight 3, The Final Solution, or whatever that racist crap was called. That book, have you heard anyone talking about how wonderful it is? Is it something that people are just jumping up and down and saying, where's my next issue of Batman de Roten Schottel? They're not, but it's still selling billions of copies because they know how to sell Batman.
Well, that kind of goes back to my question about, here's my day. I get up in the morning and I take my kids to school, and then I come and I sit and I chat with some people who are in my circle on Twitter. And then weekly I get to talk with the three of you and Brad Will and the Critical Hit people, and my wife, of course.
Weekly.
Yes, I get to talk with her weekly. Sometimes it feels that way because by the time she gets home from hospital stuff, I'm already down here. And by the time I'm done down here, she's already in bed. So there's sometimes where it feels like, sometimes we get to, sometimes we get to see each other maybe 20 minutes a day, but those interactions, all those interactions, those are the only people that I interact with, unless someone is sending me an email, one of our listeners who are out there, podcast@majorspoilers.com. And I do get some of those, but I don't have the interaction. So I'm not at the comic book store to see the rack that says, hey, Dark Knight 3, The Master Race is completely sold out, or talk to a comic book store owner and say, so how's this doing? I mean, Chris Wilson right now, he sent us an email a couple of weeks ago that we talked about on air where he was saying why these event comics sell, because people keep buying them. But unless I hear from a retailer, unless I'm out engaging with people, I don't know. And I wonder if that's maybe some of the point of view for the rest of us, is that we're not really interacting with as many comic fans as we might normally. And maybe that's shading our view on what's good or what's bad, or what's selling and not selling.
Well, people are awful.
Not all people. I think you're wonderful. No,
I get yelled at by about 1,200 people a day.
I still think you're wonderful. And I think Rodrigo is wonderful. And I think Ashley is wonderful. And I think all of our listeners are wonderful. I think all of our VIP and Patreon members are wonderful. And if you want to join that wonderful crowd, patreon.com/majorspoilers. Patreon.com/majorspoilers, as little as $2 a month. Back into the conversation.
Goopy Steven is much more fun than mean-spirited Steven. The problem is you can never tell when he's going to do...
Just automatic.
Like the frickin' mayor of Halloween Town.
Halloween Town.
I gotta keep everybody on their toes, just like so many people who sat down to listen to this episode are like, this is not the regular Major Spoilers format. Oh my God, I haven't heard this for 5 years. I love it. And we could bring it back too if we hit enough members at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
Jeez.
We are like way over our normal time there, everybody. Is anybody else want to say anything? Rodrigo, what's going on in your life?
I'm just sick, man.
Sorry. How's your Overwatch championships going?
I actually haven't been playing Overwatch. I can really only handle one video game at a time, so I've been playing Mass Effect.
How is that going?
It's not bad. Like, again, you know, people really, really crap on it, but it's, you know, I think it was just really oversold to begin with. People are still, to this day, like, Skyrim was amazing, and I remember, you know, all I remember from Skyrim is, like, walking around in a forest and then seeing a guy whose legs aren't moving. He's just like sliding along being like, hey, have you talked to Denethor at the General Goods store? And then he just like keeps walking by and I'm like, all right, guy, bye. You know, like all of these giant games are full of bugs and full of like weird, awkward things that don't quite click together because they can't play test them completely. Otherwise, this game would have come out 10 years from now. So I just go in expecting that. Like, really, Mass Effect is not any worse than a lot of the other open world games that I played recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Matthew, what's going on with you? You just celebrated, 23 years?
22.
Oh, 22. Okay.
22 years of marriage. So, you know, I got that going for me.
That's we the celebrated, anniversary.
Right. We celebrated by the kid getting to have people coming and stay over in the house. So that was fun.
I think today it's your wedding anniversary. Isn't it supposed to be the other way around? You send your child off to someone else's house for the night?
Yeah, we do things wrong.
Okay.
It's true. I had a $500 car repair that only cost me $250, which I thought was nice. That was kind of cool. Oh, and I've discovered this is the best. Okay. In the last 2 months, I have had no fewer than 9 blood draws and or IVs and or things going in my body for blood in or outs, right?
Yep.
They can no longer find the veins in my arms, so I am now routinely getting IVs and blood draws in the back of my left hand. And I hate it.
Yeah, because they have to use those really teeny tiny butterfly needles.
They have to use the butterfly needle, and of course I have nerve damage in that arm anyway, which means
that... You can't even feel it.
No, I can.
You can't even feel when they miss and it starts to burn.
Because they go straight through nerves every freaking time. And because my arm is so, you know, essentially nerveless, what you get is that burning, screaming thing just right up the back of your arm.
Yeah, that happens every time.
Like that Ryan Reynolds movie with the snail who had super speed and the snail went whoosh and left a trail of fire. Yeah. Imagine that snail in your veins. While a woman tries to explain to you that it'll only hurt for about a year and a half.
Ashley, I don't think you're getting any blood drawn. What's going on with you besides traveling to WonderCon and being wonderful?
Well, as a female, I know a thing or two about blood leaving your body for no apparent reason whatsoever.
Period joke.
I get so few opportunities on this show.
We will throw you more periods.
If that's what you want, we will open it up.
We can do it. Episode 752. So, Ashley, are you shedding any blood or at this point in time?
Oh, boy.
Has your uterine lining fallen off this week?
I would say yes and would not be pregnant. That would be the goal.
Just cut that part out, Steve.
I don't know.
Nothing else is going on. You're doing some stuff with
I'm super unemployed. Like, I got nothing.
Yeah, but people see you all over everywhere. You're on Collider. You're on, you're doing some things over at DC. Yeah. You're I saw your Flash posts that you put over there on the DC site.
Are they still airing that commercial with you and Sheldon Cooper?
If they are, then they haven't paid me for it in a good long while, and someone should let me know. No, they're airing a Three Olives Vodka commercial that I'm in right now.
Ooh, I'm going to have to watch TV.
So you can probably find it online. I haven't seen it yet, but it theoretically should be airing right about now.
Were you drunk when they shot it?
No, I don't drink.
Peas! Oh, sorry, different commercial. Jupiter Jet, how's that going?
Oh, yeah, that's the thing that I'm doing. We just got all the colors for issue 2, which is great. Issue 3 is being drawn, and I have to start writing issue 4, like, yesterday.
Uh-oh, better get on that.
Okay, here's what you do. Fade in, massive explosion. Then you see Jupiter Jet whoosh through, record scratch. Yeah, that's me. I suppose you're wondering how I got in this situation.
If I ever start something like that, can you end my life?
I like the idea. It's like, would you make a sound effect that's like scree-weerp?
Yeah.
Or it would be like,
would you just have a box that has like asterisk, record scratch, close asterisk?
That is what I would do big yellow box.
If you did the Banana Splits Suicide Squad book, they kind of do that in a few places.
They do. You know what? That book may not be the best thing ever, but it does have the best line of the month.
There's actually a couple, because Chris Wilson also...
People keep trying to pick a fight with a lion, a gorilla, and a frickin' elephant. And I'm like, yeah, Banana Splits!
I forgot.
Ooh, crossovers were really fun.
I thought... I know we're over, but I thought that the Banana Splits Suicide Squad was the weakest, followed by Booster Gold. The strongest one from the art and story side was the Johnny Quest Adam Strange story.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I really hated the art in the Green Lantern Ghost story, although I thought that, or Space Ghost story, even though I thought that was a fine story by itself. Mm. So, I don't know.
What are you going to do?
So there.
I
look forward to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kids teaming up. With,
I thought it was a fun event, but each book handled how did these properties cross over differently. Like,
well, sure.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Had they all been just, oh, we crossed over into a weird dimensional rift, has bumped into our universe, and all of a sudden, here's the Banana Splits. That would have made a lot more sense. But they didn't do that. Likewise, they did that with Space Ghost Green Lantern, and they tied in Death of Hawkman into the Adam Strange Johnny Quest book, which I thought was interesting. But it was a whole different dimension with portals and Zeta Beams and all that stuff.
Another dimension.
Chris Wilson said his favorite line from Banana Splits was, I know your mama gave you that keyboard, but you can't curb stomp cops. He thought that was the best line this week.
Good line.
Yeah.
It's not bad. That's not bad.
All right, everyone.
Oh, no. That... Okay, there is a better line in that book. Flegels, we fold our souls to Satan.
Yeah.
Is a better line.
Yeah. All right, everybody. That wraps it up for this installment of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Hey, a little bit different, right? A general conversation takes you back to the old days of the bonus episodes of the Major Spoilers Podcast. We like to throw those in every once in a while. Keep it active for you. If you want to follow us, you can follow me at Major Spoilers on Twitter. You can follow Ashley at Ashley V. Robinson. You can check out Matthew at Mighty King Cobra. And you can check out Rodrigo at Fearsome Critter. And again, if you want to support us, patreon.com/majorspoilers, $2 a month, that's like 25 cents an episode, or 50 cents an episode, depending on who's doing the math. Till next time.
And whether they're doing it right.
We know that you love comics, and we do too. We will talk with you soon.
Fat the X-ray vision of a Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, they kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Star Raven, rich like a man of iron. Might not be surprised to find that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being in the Middle East with a King Santo and soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah. What a major spoiler, wow. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.